a commencement speaker from out of the territory. And we drew one of the big men from Washington, D.C., and he was the Director of Territories and Island Possessions, Dr. Ernest Greening. So we want to especially welcome our guest of honor here today on the 36th anniversary of his first visit to our campus. To start the program, we've asked the Reverend Pritchard, who comes from Juneau to witness the graduation of his daughter, his son, and his daughter-in-law in today's exercises. And so I'm going to call now upon the Reverend Pritchard to say an invocation.
Together, let us pray. To the Creator of an orderly universe, we turn. We turn to seek a presence as we dedicate a building to the noble purpose of education. We are thankful for the human minds and hands who have brought together in an orderly fashion natural resources to erect the building. We are thankful that this building is to be named for Ernest Greening, a great Alaskan and a great American. And we so trust his youthful spirit, his desire for peace, his firm belief in the dignity of man may ever be instilled in those who study within the walls of the building. Amen.
Welcome, each one of you. And in the interest of time, allow me to yield the few minutes available to me to Governor Egan.
Thank you, President Wood, Governor Greening, Mrs. Bartlett, regents, friends. This day certainly is one that's of special significance for the University of Alaska and the future of education in our 49th state. Not only is this graduation day for the class of 1972, but it is also the time to dedicate the magnificent Ernest Greening building. This new classroom and office building is an exciting new addition to this growing campus, a facility that will enable the University of Alaska to broaden even further its diversified curriculum and greatly enhance its respected reputation as an institution of higher learning. Alaskan voters, in their foresight for better educational facilities in Alaska, authorized the expenditure of $5.25 million necessary to design and build this beautiful building. Designed and constructed by Alaskans, that edifice will house classrooms, faculty and administrative offices, conference rooms, and storage areas. Computer terminals have been installed throughout so that computers can be set up almost anywhere in the building. A generic space concept designed as an integral part of that building will allow rearrangement of rooms to meet changing space demands and to provide a greater flexibility of multiple uses. Most interior walls are demountable, which will permit new interior arrangements as desired. Mechanical and electrical systems can also be realigned with little trouble to accommodate new floor plans. The building has 2 stories below ground, 6 above ground, and has 71,000 square feet of usable space. Among initial users of the building will be the Institute of Social, Economic, and Government Research, College of Business, Economics and Government, College of Behavioral Sciences and Education, and the Center for Northern Educational Research. It is fitting that this structure will bear the name of that great Alaskan, Ernest Greening. his stature and prestige and his many virtues are in themselves his self-made monument, but it is especially befitting that this university building be named in his honor. For he has been a lifelong champion of the principle in an open society, man must have unrestricted access to knowledge and learning. Ernest Greening has had a brilliant career in many diversified endeavors, and he is continuing to use his great qualities. He has been a medical doctor, a notable newspaper editor, a crusading journalist, an administrator, author, diplomat, governor of Alaska, and United States Senator. Ernest Greening's first visit to Alaska was in May of 1936, when he was director of the Division of Territories and Island Possessions. He had been invited by the president of the University of Alaska, the then president, Charles Brunel, to give the commencement address to the graduating class of 1936. A total of 19 students made up that class. On his first visit to Alaska, he utilized his ability to observe, evaluate, and with almost visionary imagination, determine what moves were indispensable to improve the status quo in this great territory. He recommended that direct airmail be introduced between Alaska and the other states. He saw the need for airport development in this state, then still a territory, recognizing that the airplane was an important instrument in the growth of Alaska. He joined those who were urging construction of an international highway to connect Alaska with the states of the Union and pointed out the immense potential value of tourism as a leading industry. He joined forces with the then delegate to Congress from Alaska, Anthony J. Diamond, in pressing for commercial air service from the South 48 to Alaska. And that air service came into being in the summer of 1940. In 1938, President Roosevelt felt that Antarctic research was of sufficient importance to warrant a government expedition to that continent. He appointed Ernest Greening to be the chairman of the executive committee that organized this first government-sponsored expedition. The 100-mile-long glacier on the Palmer Peninsula on that continent is named after him. When Ernest heard about this distinction, he said, "It's the only place where a landmark can be named for one before he's dead." But Ernest was wrong, for this wonderful building that we see across the way here is one more landmark in his honor. He was appointed governor of the Territory of Alaska in 1939 by President Roosevelt. He championed the cause of Alaska hire for the construction of military installations in Alaska. He attacked the discrimination against employment of Alaskans by the use of absentee labor, and he recognized that Alaska suffered from other forms of absentee control in its industries and government. He and Delegate Diamond worked hard in bringing about the construction of military installations at various Alaskan locations, the Army at Fort Richardson, the Air Force at Elmendorf and Ladd Field, the Navy base at Kodiak, also came into being as a result of the continuous implorations of Greening, Diamond, and other prominent Alaskans and friends in the Congress who also captured the ear of Franklin Roosevelt. He sought and secured federal action to protect the bald eagle in Alaska. He pressed for legislation to create an Alaska Development Board, a housing authority, a retirement act for teachers, for raising the minimum old age assistance allowance, and for the enactment of a myriad of other progressive legislative matters, needs. He also urged passage of an Anti-Discrimination Act and legislation banning billboards from Alaska's highways. When the 1947 territorial legislature failed to provide funds to run the University of Alaska, Governor Greening to keep it alive personally helped solicit funds from various enterprises. Greening was an early crusader against the discrimination toward Alaska's native people. He encouraged Alaska's Indians, Eskimos, and Aleuts to become members of the legislature and appointed natives to territorial boards where they had never before had representation. He and Delegate Bob Bartlett worked hard for the establishment of the Dew Line in Alaska, the distant early warning network which would alert our military to the approach of hostile planes. He became an ardent champion of Alaska's statehood cause and was elected by the people of Alaska to serve as a member of the so-called Alaska-Tennessee Plan delegation to fight for statehood in Washington, D.C. I am proud to have been an elected colleague of Ernest and Ralph Rivers, working with the late, great Bob Bartlett in that historic, successful endeavor. That plan was conceived and formulated on this University of Alaska campus during the course of Alaska's Constitutional Convention in 1955-56. Ernest Greening delivered a thoroughly thought-provoking keynote speech to that convention, from which evolved a document still being hailed by political scientists as a model basic law treatise. As one of Alaska's esteemed United States senators, Ernest Greening was a leader in successful efforts to enact civil rights legislation, anti-poverty programs, urban renewal and low-cost housing legislation, Medicare, ratification of the Nuclear Test Ban Treaty, truth in packaging, and truth in lending bills. He initiated legislation that made possible federal programs to elevate and stimulate the arts and humanities, as well as educational programs. Ernest Greening once said that education is the foremost responsibility of any society. Good schools are indispensable in a democracy where the quality of government depends directly upon the degree of enlightenment of the electorate. Senator Greening recognized and spoke publicly on the problems of the population explosion as far back as the middle 1930s. That subject was considerably more controversial then than it is today and almost cost him his friendship with Franklin Roosevelt. But driving headlong into the gut core of causes, he is convinced and just, is the natural way of this man Greening. His is the distinction of having voiced the earliest significant outcry of categorical opposition to our policy in Southeast Asia by any member of the United States Congress. He has continued to crusade for what he felt was the lack of justification for American intervention in that area. Regardless of one's views on the matter, Senator Greening's unshakable conviction on this and on many other important national issues have caused millions of Americans to respect him as a courageous statesman. There are many glowing tributes to Ernest Greening. Alaska's beloved late Senator Bob Bartlett said of Greening, "In these days, during his presence in the United States Senate, we perhaps know him chiefly for the dissenting opinions which he delivers whenever he feels the need for dissent. For my part, I believe, and believe very deeply, that if an evil day ever arrives when dissent is not welcome, not tolerated, is stilled, then the America we know and love will have clean departed." Senator Mike Monroney of Oklahoma called him a man of vision, a man of action, a man of courage. Senator Paul Douglas of Illinois said of Greening, "He is his own man. Even if one does not agree with him in everything, one has to respect him." Adlai Stevenson acknowledged that Ernest Greening was unmatched as a speaker, and although he was acclaimed for his own eloquence, Stevenson felt that he was not Greening's peer as a speaker. Associate Justice William O. Douglas of the United States Supreme Court called Greening a very versatile, a very brave, a very deep man. You read his life and you will find that way, way back, He was standing for principles of integrity and honor, resigning from managing editorships of newspapers on the basis of principle. He is really a considerable American, one of the great men of our times. President John F. Kennedy said that I have the highest regard for Ernest Greening. His keen mind and vast knowledge of Alaskan and international affairs are greatly needed in the United States Senate. Now, this only briefly sketches the fascinating, colorful, impressive life of Ernest Greening, only touches upon some of the great legislation that came from his heart and his mind. I have not covered all of his many, many accomplishments for Alaska, for the country he so dearly loves, and for mankind. I want to say here that his lovely wife, Dorothy, has played an important part in the destiny of Ernest Greening. Her indomitable spirit, her counsel, her constant companionship, and her devotion have been a great encouragement to him. All Alaskans should be extremely proud of what this outstanding man has contributed for all of us. It is most appropriate that we are here today to dedicate that fine building in honor of a great and illustrious Alaskan, Ernest Greening. I hope that those who meditate there will often consider the stature of the distinguished American for whom it is named. He is an inspiration to everyone who quests for knowledge and who believes in the nobility and destiny of individuality everywhere on this earth. Thank you very much.
That was Governor William A. Egan. This is KUAC in College, Alaska.
It is unfortunate that the governor and Mrs. Egan must leave at this particular time, but he is already late. And I thanked him before he left for the fine remarks that he made regarding Governor Greening, who is former Governor Greening and Senator of the United States. And on behalf of the Board of Regents, I wish to thank him very much for being here, because we are very proud, the University of Alaska is very proud, to have the opportunity to name such a fine landmark as this building is, the Ernest Greening Building. I have known Ernest Greening for some time. I returned to Alaska after being 12 years in Canada, and one day a friend of mine, Vic Rivers, called me and he said, the governor would like to talk with you. And I said, well, I'll come right over. He says, no, the governor's going to come over to your office. So a few minutes later they came in. I was introduced to Governor Greening, and Vic Rivers says, well, you fellows have something to talk about, and so I'll leave. Well, I didn't know what I had to talk about with the governor, but he spent several hours with me. We went down and had a little toddy together later on in the evening, and all this time he never told me his thing about what he wanted to talk to me about, and I didn't want to be rude enough to ask him. But he asked me lots of questions about Alaska and everything else. A few days later, he called me on the phone, and he wanted to know, he said he'd like to appoint somebody to the Board of Regents that's under 40 years of age. And I said, you know, I can't help you because I'm a little over 40. He says, don't be so naive. He says, I want to appoint you. And I said, well, it would certainly be a great honor. But I'll tell you that he took the trouble to find out exactly how I thought, how I felt about the university before he would appoint me, even though I was an alumnus of the University of Alaska. And I want to tell you something else, that from that time on, believe me, if he didn't think that things were going just a little bit fast enough to start getting the University of Alaska out of the mud hole that it was been allowed to get in during the war, he would not hesitate to call you on the phone, or if he came through town, to invite you and have dinner with him and then start telling you what he thought maybe you ought to be doing a little bit better than you were doing. Now, that doesn't mean that he was trying to control the Board of Regents. He certainly wasn't, but he just didn't want us laying around doing nothing. Now, that's all there was to it. So I always consider former Governor Greening, Senator, one of the greatest men of Alaska, because without his push, without his foresightedness, without his active support during a very desperate time of finances within this territory of Alaska at that time, we would not today have the fine university that we do have. And to Governor Greening, I say thank you very much for all the guidance that you have given to us. Now, we have, well, we don't have Mrs. Egan here, do we? We can have Dorothy. Where's Heidi Boucher? I think she's around here doing something. Would she like to step in? Heidi Bartlett is here, and with Mrs. Boucher would come forward and unveil a bronze plaque in honor of former Governor Greening. I always call him Governor because I did for so many years. So if you would just take the one side and raise it up, I will read the inscription on it. Ernest Greening Building, named in honor of Ernest Greening. Governor of Alaska, 1939-1953. United States Senator, 1958-1968. Scholar, author, and historian. A governor of unusual devotion to the principles of democracy, advocate of Alaska statehood, a U.S. Senator of national eminence, and always a champion of higher education. In recognition of his contributions to the development of Alaska and its university, this building is named for Ernest Greening and is dedicated this 14th day of May, 1972. Ernest Greening.
The last speaker was William A. O'Neill, president of the University of Alaska's Board of Regents.
We want you to say a few words.
Governor Greening wishes to make a few comments at this time.
Well, it was certainly most generous and kind of the Board of Regents to name this building as it has. I deeply appreciate their generosity. And I'm overwhelmed by the generosity of the tributes just paid me by Bill Egan and Bill O'Neill. They're far beyond what I deserve, but I'm extremely grateful for them. What is more significant about this occasion and exhilarating is that in giving the social science a new home and special emphasis denotes one more gratifying step in the progress of our university. A university, this university, the university, incarnates the soul and spirit of our people. Their support of it, their support of its adequacy, furnishes the living proof of their devotion to the quest for a higher life, which we must all continue to seek. And as we trace the history of the University of Alaska from its humble beginnings as the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines half a century ago, to its culmination today in a galaxy of edifices devoted to the varied aspects of our culture, we cannot but be proud and happy at the fruition of this cherished goal. It has not always been so. No, indeed. This university, born of the vision of James Wickersham, legislator, publicist, explorer, bibliophile, bibliographer, statesman, undoubtedly the outstanding Alaskan public figure in the first third of our century. And this university thereafter was kept alive almost solely through the devotion and unflagging determination of Charlie Bunnell, its first president, who gave up a distinguished career as a jurist to dedicate himself to what he considered a higher task. 36 years ago, as has been mentioned, almost to this exact date, in mid-May of 1936 as director of the newly created Division of Territories and Island Possessions in the Department of the Interior, I was initiated into the splendor of the far north. Sitting on the porch of President Bunnell's modest cottage, where he did all his own housework, in enjoying not only the magnificent views across the Tadnor Valley, seeing Mount Hayes and Deborah and Hess and Mount McKinley turn crimson in the evening light, I drank deeply of the fountain of President Bunnell's insight and wisdom. I also learned, though not from him at that period, but some of the graduating class, how Charlie Bunnell had made it possible for any youngster desiring a higher education who could come to the university with a few hundred dollars to pay the initiation fee and be aided by him to work his way through, a great need in those days when practically all these students were impecunious and needed that help. I little realized at that time that I would some years later, as governor of the territory, be privileged to assist Charlie Bunnell in keeping the university alive. The Organic Act of 1912, under which Alaskans at that time struggled for a modicum of self-government, had under the self-serving guardianship of absentee interests become a happy hunting ground from which they decided to take as much as possible and leave as little as they could. Their design provided a small legislature with only 8 senators and 16 representatives, respectively 2 of the former, 2 senators from each of the 4 judicial divisions and 4 representatives, so that it was possible for 4 men, and in certain cases for only 3 men, to block any legislation, which is precisely their intent, so as to prevent any extravagant expenditure and not permit the people of Alaska to work out their own destiny as they saw fit. The university, then in its infancy, came under their well-directed fire. Why squander money on a university? It would be cheaper, their representatives in the legislature said, to pay for scholarships for the few deserving and ambitious students and enable them to go outside for their education. Of course, Charlie Bunnell couldn't possibly agree with that. And so he continued his lone and dedicated determination to keep the university alive. And so in session after session, biennial session after biennial session, his requests, his modest requests for a new building, for repair of an old building, for just keeping the university alive, were jeered at and scorned. And this went on in 1941, 43, 45, in the special session of 1946, called to provide for the returning veterans, and even in 1947. But at that time, the legislators overdid their hand and pulled the house down upon themselves and upon the territory. In that session, they left the territory with an indebtedness of $2.5 million more than revenues. It was necessary to freeze all our appropriations and necessary to go out and borrow money from private sources to keep the university alive. But as a result, the people were finally aroused. They went to the polls in 1948 and threw the rascals out and started a new regime of responsibility and progress. And we've seen its fruits today. Nothing could be more gratifying than those 2 great accomplishments of the past decade and a half, the coming of statehood and the burgeoning of the University of Alaska, so that now it has become a great institution of which we, all Alaskans and all Americans, can rightfully be proud. And when I think back of those lonely days of Charlie Bunnell, I'm confident that he's looking down on this great development happily. I just wish he could be with us today, but I know that he's with us in spirit. I recall seeing the amazement on the face of Ernest Patti, successor to the presidency, when he watched from the gallery of the House of Representatives, seeing the five representatives of the 4th Judicial Division, which then included this area. The legislature had been enlarged the previous year by Tony Diamond's proportionate representation, so there were five representatives, and seeing those all five vote solidly against an appropriation for the university, which was saved only by the votes of the representatives from the other divisions. But all five of them were retired in the coming election by the electorate. Three of them are still extant. I hope they have a proper sense of shame for what they did on that occasion. There's one more thing that I want to say. At this commencement address, 36 years ago, I spoke on a theme which was very dear to me then and is no less dear to me now. And that is the necessity of all of us working unceasingly to make democracy work. The democratic process, that great legacy of our founding fathers, that uniquely enlightened group of men who emerged in the last quarter of the 18th century, to start a new and radical experiment on this side of the Atlantic, unprecedented in the old world from which their immediate progenitors had come, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press, freedom of worship, freedom from search and seizure. This great legacy does not run on automatically. Each generation